brought to you by GMSDC Radio and broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's time for Let's Talk Small Business with your host, Stacy Key.
Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Small Business. I am not the fabulous Miss Stacy Key. She is out and about doing what she does every day to help certify, develop, and advocate for minority businesses in the state of Georgia and across the nation. I am happily hosting and filling in today. My name is Veronica Maldonado Torres, Program Director of the Georgia Mentor Protege Connection. And we've got an exciting show today with someone that I happen to know very well because he was in our Mentor Protege program last year. But this is the place, as a reminder, where you can come to every Tuesday at 11:30 to learn about everything small business. Resource, tips, how to get ahead, and always events that are going on that can help you enhance and make those strategic connections that foster growth every single day. So without further ado, I'd like to go ahead and introduce our wonderful guest today, Mr. Jeff Coe of Supreme Resources. Jeff, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, Jeff, again, as I mentioned before, I know you, but these wonderful audience members do not. So please share with us who you are and the company that you represent here today.
Okay, well, my name is Jeff Coe, and I am the CEO of Supreme Resources. We are located in Suwannee. And what we do is we help companies customize their chemistry and their chemical supply chain.
So what does that mean, Jeff?
So on the chemistry side, we actually have scientists that tweak the properties of materials so that these companies can launch these materials into adjacent industries.
So share with us, what are, when you mention these companies, what kind of companies are we talking about?
So they could be like, you know, anything that requires some specialized chemistry where we have an expertise. So automotive, defense. So you might actually, we make things, you know, sort of stronger, harder, more flexible, or less expensive to manufacture for different industries.
And if I recall, you'd mentioned at one point one of the solutions that your company was able to provide an automotive company, some chemical or something that you guys put together. Do you remember that example you gave me at one point?
Yes. It was a transmission clutch.
Exactly.
So we actually made a product that was, it gets a little technical, but it makes it less, we made it less spongy, so that it could be used not only in tractors, but also in backhoes and things like that.
But there was a problem. They had a problem.
They had a
specifically.
Problem. Right,
what
right.
was that problem? Because you came in, your team came in, and they found the solution. So share with us a little bit about what that problem was so our audience members can get an idea of how vast your services and what your company does can really help to support these major organizations.
So on the chemistry side, for this example, what we did was we actually helped a company actually get into aftermarket OEM. So they'd have some experience with off-road before, but they couldn't get into the OEM manufacturers. So we'd actually got them to aftermarket, got them qualified. By changing the chemistry, we actually produced a product that was cheaper, better performing, and cleaner for the guys on the line. So it was less toxic, there were less volatiles. So the guys were happier to use it because it was cleaner. And it was a win-win-win-win because we had partnered with our customer's supplier. Gone back in the supply chain and actually changed the fundamental chemistry.
And you guys also work with organizations like Procter & Gamble, correct?
We work with big consumer products companies, and that's the other side of our business. So when I say that we customize chemical supply chain, we do that for not only just industrial chemicals, but large sort of fast-moving consumer goods, food and food additive companies. And what we do there is we customize, design, develop, and deliver these high-value, low-risk supply chains. So basically, the classic example of that is we move hard-to-move stuff into hard-to-get-to places.
Okay, I think that's, we know where to go for hard to get stuff and hard to move as well. So how long has Supreme Resources been around? Share with us a little bit about the background and you having its second generation and what you've brought into the table with this business.
So we've been around since 1988 and since 1992 in Georgia. And we've grown it sort of over the years and added to our staff. Most recently, we've experienced sort of a nice growth spurt over the last, 7 or 8 years. I joined about 10 years ago, 9 or 10 years ago. And I took over 8 years ago. And I think the key to our growth has really been in the driving principles around how we work with our employees and our customers.
Okay. Yeah. And so as a result of that, what have you seen? What have you seen, focusing on the people, on the talent, oftentimes, whether it's through the program or working with other MBEs or small businesses, you always hear like, it's all about the talent. It's all about the folks that you have, the employees, the engagement, the company culture. Mm-hmm. How have you seen that impact your business, as you say, when you focus on the people? What are you doing to make those changes and retain folks and have that low turnover that is critical for a small business?
It's really interesting because I think you gave a few answers because you know a little bit about our company having been
I did. I gave it away
mentee,
no.
last year, but I think I always talk about this to our employees and to the teams. To the teammates. And I believe that, I was a teacher in a previous life. And for me, maybe a lot of this comes from that background because my goal really is to help watch people grow and help people come to close to realizing their potential. And I always believe that starting with that, regardless of what happens in the business, if you start with that in mind, you've already won. Right. So for us, really, it really is about the people. Of course, we have a healthy focus on revenue and profitability and all this stuff. But I was actually chatting with I belong to a group of CEOs in town called Vistage. And we were actually sharing an issue the other day about a new business that I wanted to entertain. And it requires a lot more people, a lot more different skills. And we don't make a lot of money on it. And my friends were, I got excoriated. I mean, they were just making fun of me all day long. Okay, Jeff, so you want to take on a lot more work and not make any money. So what's the point? Why would you do this? And I told them about sort of my approach. It really is about the people. I said that I really need to build an environment where our people can grow. And I need to give our employees a career path. Because really, for me, it's really all about raising level of skill and helping them find opportunities inside our business so we can continue to multiply. And it doesn't have to be all about the money. Now, of course, I have a plan.
The money will come, right?
We will make
the
money.
Right people in the right place.
We will make money on this. It just might not be this year or next year.
So you're willing to make that investment.
It's an investment. Yeah. It's an investment. And so I believe that, while the goal of business is making money, it's not the end. Mm-hmm. That's really about the people.
So you're about changing lives. And
yes,
as a
yes,
result
yes.
of changing lives and
right,
putting people
right.
in a place that, they want to be and they want to mm-hmm. grow, as a result of that, you guys will grow as well. And I think that's a pretty sound philosophy. A lot of times folks go in, for profit mm-hmm. only, and you can see the change in the organization and not also been able to withstand difficult moments in the marketplace. So that's a very solid, great tip for our small businesses listening today to focus on the people. So how does that connect with you as a person?
I think that the background of that comes from the fact that I think I was a teacher in a former life. And I think that's just part of who I am.
It's organically
yes.
spilling into this amazing role.
But it's also part of, I think, the growth of the company. I mean, you'd asked about that before. And I think, the people extends to the customers. And so, focusing on the customer's issues and being all for the customer is really important, and not focusing on how necessarily you're going to make a lot of money. You shouldn't lose money, but you should make it, worth it so that, you have to have a little bit of faith in your customers as well.
I like that. And have faith in your customers as well. And so as part of your growth plan, is that the innovative piece that you bring to the table? Or is there something else that you guys are working on as part of your growth plan? And what innovation are you bringing to the table?
All right. So this might take a little bit. I'm going to answer your question.
Okay.
But it might take a second.
We can deviate for a moment and come back. Right. Don't worry about it.
So the innovation piece is interesting because people have asked me this. And I think there's a common misconception that all innovation is product invention. And it's not. So while we actually do come up with products, if you look at our entire portfolio and the history of our company, the product innovation or the product invention contributes a lot and all the other innovations. So if you look at sort of, I think it's important to look at the entire product offering. So if you think about the way we, you know, sort of become aware, choose, buy, use, and service a product or service, right? There's sort of a series of different levers that you can pull around innovation. How do you price it? How do you package and bundle it? How do you deliver it? These are areas where you can actually innovate and not have to come up with a new product. So, Veronica, if I've
already
asked you,
I like that.
Think about like 15 years ago. What are two things that you spend your monthly budget on, spend money on?
I know exactly. Well, when you have a kid and you didn't have a kid 15 years ago.
Oh, that doesn't count, right?
But from a business standpoint?
No, from your own pocketbook.
Look at Jeff. Now he's interviewing me here. Okay. All right. From my own pocketbook. 15 years ago.
Like from a daily basis.
On a daily basis.
Yeah.
Let's see. 15 years ago, what I didn't spend 15 years ago to what I do now today.
Yeah.
Groceries. Myself.
Well, because you have to feed more people.
Isn't it?
No, because it doesn't have to be an answer, but I certainly know what it is true, what that's true for me.
Music. What about music?
Okay, so
spending money. Yeah.
You don't spend money on music today?
We do.
You do spend money on music today, but you didn't spend 15 years ago? I think I would
posit. How about online
music?
Okay.
I bet you spent more 15 years ago.
Yes, absolutely.
So what do you spend more on now?
More
that you didn't really have to think about 15 years ago? So I know for me, there's two truths.
Okay.
And one of them is coffee.
Okay, yes, totally.
Right? How many times do you go?
Absolutely.
I did one month, I did my tally, and granted, I actually was buying for the office and stuff like that because I wanted to treat them. But I remember a few years ago, I did the math, and I was spending on average something like $300, $400 on coffee a month.
Okay.
And I was like, what is this? What's wrong with me? Now, I drank a lot of coffee, so we got a coffee machine in the office, and it cut down a little bit, but I was treating, you know, the employees to coffee and things like that, and I said, you know, this is crazy. Now, is coffee innovative?
Depends.
Is it a new product?
Well, you now have organic green coffee, and so that's an innovative approach to regular traditional coffee, but yeah.
Right. It's not. It's been around for thousands of years.
True. There's been altered, right? So the marketability.
Where do you go for your coffee? Where do you go for your coffee?
I go several places. Number one, I have to go with Colombian coffee. Okay, right, that's okay. Number one here. But Starbucks.
Yeah, I mean it's very common, right? I mean when I go on business trips, my sales guys are always like, "Oh, I'll meet you at the Starbucks," because there's Wi-Fi. So it's interesting, right? Like Starbucks took a product that was not an innovative product. It was coffee. Right.
Sure.
It took a concept that's been around. I mean, guys in Europe go to the cafe every day, right? I grew up in New York, and in Soho they had coffee cafes, but they packaged it in a way that was innovative. They created a piazza, and now they're putting like, you know, wireless charging. They did the whole music thing. I mean, they really changed it, and then they changed the way they priced it, right? So you're actually paying for an experience, and I think that's part of the way we've innovated as well. So we've really not, I think the value out of innovation has not really necessarily always been around the product itself, but the way.
The experience.
The product offering is delivered.
I like that approach.
The same thing with the iPhone. That was the other thing. 15 years ago, I didn't spend a lot of money on my phone. It was, you know, monthly bill, I think it was like $35 or something, $30. And then everyone came out with this, Steve Jobs came out with this iPhone, right? That was not even 15 years, that was like 8 years ago or something. I think 2007 or something like that. But I think the innovation there wasn't around the phone. The phone was already in your pocket. But the iPhone changed everything. Now, that was a product innovation. That was a true product innovation. But what
I see the distinction.
I submit to you that the real value that drove the iPhone was not the phone. You had to have it, but was the App Store and the apps.
Opened a whole new world.
Exactly.
So what is your App Store over at Supreme Resources?
So, yeah. So that's, I think that's a challenge, right? So exactly. So what we've done is we've built a model of being able to customize offerings to our customers quickly and easily across geographies. So globally, we can turn on and off capacity and in specific areas. Specifically, we can't do everything.
So help us articulate that for some folks who may not necessarily understand your industry per se. So you have warehouses
in
different parts of the world.
Different parts of the world.
And where are those?
We figured out, well, again, they're on and off, but all around the U.S. and North America, in Europe and in Asia. And so the idea is that we can scale up and scale down the delivery mechanism based on the platform that we have for global sort of customs and VAT resolution into a single bill.
Which streamlines the process for the client,
exactly.
And it's super, super easy.
Exactly. So that's one thing.
That's an innovative.
But that's an innovative platform, like the iPhone, that you can continue to sell apps on, right? So I think the innovation is not around the product, because people have had warehouses forever, people have ships forever, and people have had the ability to do what we do forever.
So that's the question to pose to our small business audience today. In what ways are you innovating in your business that isn't necessarily creating a new product, but how are you innovating your services, your offerings, the customer experience, streamlining communication, even communication, invoicing, et cetera, with your client? I think that's a very, very valid point to make. In what ways are you innovating? Maybe that's the to-do for the week to consider.
That's a good point.
And
the thing is that what's interesting is not all innovation around that is good, right? I mean, it has to fit your industry. So if you think about subscription pricing was a big deal back in the early 2000s. Everyone's like, hey, we're going to go subscription. So you know who tried subscription?
Who was that?
Did really well. They were this, you had to go and mail the CDs back.
Remember that? Yes.
And then you know who did the same exact thing at the same time?
No.
Someone who Netflix offered Netflix to buy them.
Oh,
it was
yeah,
Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're like, we'll go to subscription pricing. Well, that didn't fit their model, right? So it's actually, the innovation really has to fit your offering. You can't give away your product. And that's where, you know, that healthy obsession with profitability and revenue, I think, is important.
And I think to your point, I mean, that example in and of itself, you know, you as a Blockbuster, and we kind of see where they are today, you know, what you're doing today may not be relevant tomorrow. So how are you
correct,
making sure that you're ahead of the trends and relevant to the marketplace? Because, you know, if we don't adapt, if we don't evolve, then potentially your business can become obsolete. So you know, for our audience listening today, you know, making sure that they're staying relevant in the marketplace and anticipating curves along the way, which is always a valid thing for our small businesses to be concerned about, is staying up to date and abreast in the news and what's taking place in the marketplace. And so tell us a little bit, Jeff, about how you stay up to date with what's going on, whether it's in your industry, whether it's small businesses. Where do you garner the resources from to continue doing what you do on a day-to-day basis? And you mentioned one. You mentioned Vistage, and so we'd like to learn a little bit more about those resources that you seek.
All right, so that's an interesting question. So how do I stay up to date and innovate? And I think we hear a lot from customers, and I think it's part of our business model to stay very close to the customer. So we listen to their concerns, and we actually develop the offerings around what they're most concerned about. And then we kind of, you know, it's like searching off a hashtag. If you see a concern trending when you talk to different customers,
I like that analogy.
You go
there.
Back and you say, hey, this must be a big deal because everyone's hashtagging this in their conversations. Let's go see where else in the industry, sure. What's going on, what's the thought leadership around that.
So staying very close to the ground, mm-hmm. getting customer feedback, finding out where the areas are where you guys can innovate, you know, mm-hmm. based on that allows you guys to stay kind of close to the ground.
But at the same time, I get these sort of ideas from folks. Say, hey, why don't you try this? Can you help us with this? And I think one of the dangers of having someone who's very entrepreneurial drive an industry company, and it could be coming from our sales guys. It's not necessarily me, right? They come up with these new business models. And I think the challenge is you have limited resources. So you have to stick to your knitting a little bit. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, I'm saying innovate, right? And on the other hand, I'm saying don't innovate too far beyond what you know in one giant step, unless you have the resources to do so. Because our biggest challenges have come when I've tried to launch a product that's taken us 3, 5, 7 years because it was too far away for us. It was too much of a sort of a reach. And this product, I mean, doesn't have to be like a new molecule. It can be a new service offering that just took too long to launch because we didn't stick close enough to our knitting.
I like that. Don't get too far ahead without being able to have the resources to
correct,
be able to make it
plan.
Come to fruition. And so at this, I'm going to take a quick break right now and also share with the audience that we are celebrating Asian American heritage this month. And Mr. Jeff Coe is one of our bringing us his wisdom on his entrepreneurial journey and the growth and explosion of Supreme Resources. And we have a little bit of time left, so we're going to move to those key obstacles. Share with us, what are those key obstacles you face to explosive growth? What are those obstacles, and how do you overcome those?
Overcoming, I'm trying to figure out, but I could definitely tell you what the obstacles are about.
Okay.
So I'd say human capital, so all right. People, good people, financial capital, money, and competition from large players. And then I put a fourth one on there, mm-hmm. which is also the sort of, it's kind of like the tyranny of customization. So it was Tracy. There was a book written in the 90s called The Discipline of Market Leaders. I think it was in the 90s. I don't know if you remember it, but the idea in that he posits that there are three models of competition mm-hmm. and only three. You could be an operationally excellent company. You could be an innovator or a market leader, or you can be a customizer. Right, and you can, and a lot of small businesses by necessity are customizers, and I've talked all about customization, you know, this
sure.
whole time, and that's how we've been successful. But the problem is, when you want explosive growth, you need a way to scale it. So you need an app store that doesn't cost you money to scale, and that's a problem we haven't solved yet, right? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. You've actually been experiencing explosive growth for a little bit now, specifically, mm-hmm. I think anywhere from the last 2 to 4 years, mm-hmm. and so you've got something around 400% growth. So, you know, those challenges that you've had, just very quickly, those challenges that how have you been able to overcome at least some of those? And where are those resources that you are seeking them? Where a small business, can come to this place and hear from subject matter experts or consultants that can help with some of those areas that you need, specifically around scaling?
Well, one of the extra solutions was the Georgia Mentor-Protege Connection. I learned a lot through the program. And I was held accountable to doing certain things. We actually saw how big boys did certain things, and we learned a lot. So I think part of it's education, right? Part of it's connections. So through relationships that I have in the business community, I was able to talk to the right folks in the banking community to sort of to change our banking sort of the relationship with the different part of the bank.
So access to capital was a key strategy.
Capital, correct. Because we were limited by just not the bank, but the part of the bank we were dealing with. And so once we switched and changed the way we pitched the capital need, there were several banks who bid for our business. And I think that there's little things like that that come from speaking to folks who've been there and done that. And I think that's helped us a lot.
So surrounding yourself with a network of you know, small businesses. And for those folks that don't know, the Georgia Mentor Protégé Connection is a development program where businesses like Jeff's get matched with major corporations for 12 months of development in three key areas, and Jai, the Coca-Cola company. Yeah. And I'll take a quick moment just to say that anyone interested in the program can visit Georgia, spelled out, mpc.org. We are seeking the next protégé class. So go ahead and take a look at georgiampc.org. But, you know, having access to subject matter experts and folks that can really have this one-to-one conversation. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, having folks that are at a different scale level than you and can kind of share those best practices on how to jump to that place. So that's really helped you, you know, during your explosive growth period as well.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've got about 4 minutes left on the show, and we're going to be going on to our next question, Jeff. How about that? So how has your company changed over the years? I think we've talked a little bit about that already. Is there anything specifically that we didn't get to touch regarding that?
I would say, you know, when we started, we were a single product line, specialty chemicals sales company. So all we did was knock on doors and sell a thing.
A particular
line of products.
Line of products, okay.
So we were a manufacturer's rep. And then over the years, we changed as the industry changed. So before fashionable to import from Asia, we started looking at raw materials from Asia to import into the United States, you know, for manufacturers. And, you know, then everyone jumped on the bandwagon and said, okay, I think it was 15 years ago or so, it was this push towards, 10 years ago, low-cost country or best-cost country sourcing. So go to wherever, all these manufacturers would go and say, what's the China price? Or what's the cheapest way to get the stuff so we can make our stuff, right? And so we helped people do that. They didn't want to pay for the risk. They didn't want to do the sourcing. So that's what we did. We prepaid companies, we did sourcing, and then it swung the other way, right? So then now they have everything in place. So how do we get what's already in place sort of more guaranteed, sort of verify the quality and verify the consistency? And now today everyone's about cash, inventory control, supply chain efficiency. So now we're doing that. So it's actually staying close to the customer again, and seeing what they need and then developing a solution to consistently deliver those things.
So if you could give the small business community a word of advice, what would it be? What's like that big nugget of wisdom that that you think you need to leave behind today?
Well, I certainly don't think I'm qualified to provide advice, but I do know some of the advice that I've been given that I struggle to follow every day is always things like focus on what's important, not only what's urgent in the company. So they say work on the company, not in the company.
In the company.
Yeah, so we hear that a lot. I think another piece of advice I got from the prime minister, actually, of one of our companies, he's actually an alumnus of Emory University's MBA program. And he actually said, pay attention to detail. So even though he was the prime minister, he was actually going through individual spreadsheets and policy documents that his staffers were doing because he had this obsession with detail and got, you know, a lot of things. And then I think the final thing is don't be afraid to push and ask for things is what I was told.
From the client perspective or from the employee perspective or both?
As a small business, mm-hmm. as a small business, ask, because you'll be surprised what your suppliers and your customers will give you.
You always have the no if you never ask. But if you ask, you potentially have the yes. Kind of along that line?
Whether you will know, yeah.
Well, we want to thank you so much, Jeff, for being with us today. Jeff Coe with Supreme Resources. I think you've been able to add a lot of knowledge to our small business community today with your nuggets of wisdom and your experiences and sharing what Supreme Resources does and how you guys have experienced explosive growth and the tools that you guys are using to make sure that you're staying ahead of that growth and on top of that growth. And for our small business listeners, just a friendly reminder that GMSDC will have its business opportunity luncheon on June 9th and its well-known first Friday meetings on June the 5th. So again, we want to thank Jeff Coe as we celebrate Asian Heritage Month today and this month. And we look forward to hearing from you all and listening in on Let's Talk Small Business next Tuesday at 11:30. Thank you so much and make it a great week.